Giles Brown.
GB.
GQ.
Right then, I'm speaking to Christina Hamilton about famous cat lovers through the centuries. I couldn't resist this one.
Well, little lady, let me elucidate here.
Everybody wants to be a cat, because a cat's the only cat who knows where it's at.
Tell me, everybody's picking up on that feline beat, 'cause everything else is obsolete. A square with a horn makes you wish you weren't born
every time he plays.
But with a square in the act, you can set music back
to the caveman days.
I've heard some corny birds who tried to sing.
Still, a cat's the only cat who knows how to swing.
Who wants to dick long head kick stuff like that?
When everybody wants to be a cat, a square with a horn makes you wish you weren't born every time he plays. Oh, a rinky tinky dinky with a square in the act, you can set music back to the caveman days.
Oh, a rinky tinky tinky.
Yes, everybody wants to be a cat, because a cat's the only cat who knows where it's at. When playing jazz, you always has a welcome mat, 'cause everybody digs a swinging cat.
Absolutely, everybody wants to be a cat. I couldn't resist playing that one. Right then, my next guest is Christina Hamilton. She has written a book called Famous Cat Lovers Through the Centuries, from Cleopatra to Warhol. Delighted to be joining me on the line from the UK, Christina Hamilton. Christina, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Giles.
Good to have you with us. Everybody loves cats. I mean, let's face it, cat people are the only people you want to be surrounding yourselves with.
I agree with that.
Everybody from Cleopatra to Andy Warhol, what gave you the inspiration then to put pen to paper about our feline friends then?
Well, I had a cat. Unfortunately, she died, but I had her for 19 years, and I've always loved cats, and I had a special relationship with her, and I love history. So I just started to look into the subject, and Blackbird Books, who knew Stephanie Zia, who's the owner, knew that I loved cats, and we started talking, and she asked me to write the book.
So where do you start off? You start off back in the early days. I mean, the Egyptians worshipped cats as gods, as we know, and some cat owners will actually say that indeed still that still pertains. Cats still think that they are gods the way they react. So
indeed.
So you kick off with the Egyptians, which I suppose if you're going to go to start somewhere, then the ancient history of the Egyptians is the place to begin.
Yes. Well, we start really when the wild cats came out in the Middle East. Research has shown that 12,000 years ago, wild cats came out from the woods, and when they started to grow and store grain. And that's how they used to attract the grain, attracted the mice, and the cats came out and obviously started to eat them for food. So you could say that that's when the cat and mouse story began.
I mean, you talk about, everybody knows about, you know, dogs, of, you know, being wolves who were attracted to, I don't know, the warmth of the fire, etc. But I never actually thought about that, about cats. I mean, when you saw grain, of course, their natural food source would be there.
Yes, exactly.
But I mean, cats have never really been, you could argue that cats, I mean, if you ever try to take a cat down to the vet and put it in the cat box, I mean, they've never really been domesticated.
No, that's. I think that's one of the attractions of cats for people, really, is that they're, you know, they can love you one minute and hate you the next.
And I suppose the other thing about the cats is the fact is that they are independent. I mean, I've got a lot. I mean, I live in a place and I've got a lot of land, luckily, and a lot of open space. People always say to me, "Oh, you should get a dog. A dog would love it here." But my problem is that and I, because I basically live in the studio. So with my cat, the aforementioned and illustrious 50 Shades of Grey, she, you know, I mean, I can leave her all day and it's not a big problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's another attraction for cats as pets, is that they are independent and they can be left alone. Some, you know, my cat used to go out in the garden, but a lot of cats live in flats, you know. People don't have gardens and they're perfectly happy there. So there are lots of attractions, I think.
Now, the Egyptians, as we said before, the Egyptians worship the cat. Mm. I mean, the penalty for killing a cat in ancient Egypt was quite severe.
It was death. You were killed,
and also
very severe.
If your cat passed, went over the rainbow bridge, as people want to call it, there was a certain mark you had to mark for the mourning period.
I know. It's really interesting that they shaved their eyebrows as a sign of mourning.
Now, you know, that's an interesting one, because, you know, last time I looked, I mean, if my cat had eyebrows, I'd be quite alarmed, to be honest with you. So it's a strange thing to want to shave, isn't it, really?
I know. I mean, it's, yeah, so, but that was their custom and their culture. So, yeah, that's what they did.
So where do you start to get the information then on somebody like a Cleopatra or a Japanese emperor? Because obviously this is back in the annals of history. I mean, did you go trolling the British Museum?
There's lots of information on the internet, but I always try to get two, you know, separate sources of information.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that it's as correct as I can make it. If it's a good story and there's not exactly a lot of evidence, I still put it in the book, but I say, you know, I'm not sure, you know, make your own mind up, really.
And I mean, even
I do as much as research as I possibly can to ensure that the stories are correct.
I mean, the ancients loved cats, as I said. I mean, the Prophet Muhammad apparently was rumoured to have... Did he cut his sleeve off or something? There's a story about that.
Yeah, his favourite cat, Muezza, was sleeping on his coat. So instead of disturbing the cat, he cut the sleeve of the coat off.
Which is,
so you wouldn't disturb the
cat.
Which
is quite, you know, it's quite fashion after felines, that's what we say. what was... If we move through history, however, I mean, certain periods of the Middle Ages were not good. It was not a good time to be a cat.
No, they weren't. I mean, that's what's interesting, really, is that, you know, cats have been very popular in certain countries and not popular in others. But, yeah, in the Middle Ages, the papal bull in 1233, Pope Gregory IX, denounced cats, especially black cats, as evil and in league with Satan. So basically what happened was people started killing cats. And when, you know, there are lots of witch hunts in Europe that we all know about, and when the witches were killed, their cats were killed as well. So when the plague happened in the 14th century, in Europe there were very few surviving cats. And there is a theory that because there weren't many cats, the vermin was out of control because the cats would have eaten the rats, basically. And things might have been different if there had been more cats.
So it is the revenge of Tiddles, basically, isn't it? Basically,
yeah.
moving through there, let's go to a few of the famous cat people, if we like. Now, this struck me as Isaac Newton. You know, Apple. Everybody knows, you know, gravity, apples falling on heads.
Yeah.
Great thinkers, etc. So there is this rumor going that one of the great lamented or great forgotten triumphs of Sir Isaac Newton was the invention of the cat flap.
Indeed, yes. Well, it's sort of entrenched, I think, in popular culture, and there are quite a few versions. There is a written source that from the 19th century, I believe, and the link is in the book if people want to go and read it, that he was tired of opening and closing his study door for his cat and the kitten. So he cut a large and a small hole in the door. But, of course, the cat came through the large hole and then the kitten came through the large hole as well. So it does make me laugh that this, you know, serious scientist couldn't work out that you only needed to make one hole in the door.
Mm.
Then it was later embellished. It said it wasn't at his house, it was at his lab laboratory, and that there was an addition of a piece of felt so that, you know, they didn't let the light through when they came.
So the thing is, what I find quite interesting about that is the fact that it's that getting up and going out and the study door situation, because that translates through. I mean, there are universal truths, Christina, through the ages. And I think we can agree that if you're settling down to do some writing or something like that, or having to go through your taxes, heaven forfend, or anything like that, then that is the moment that the cat will either decide to sit on your laptop, not a problem that Isaac Newton had, to be honest, but definitely want to try and go out of the building.
Yeah, absolutely. But other writers have had problems with cats sitting on desks and sort of, you know, I mean, disrupting them.
Presumably, if Newton should have actually had a cat trap door in his desk, then that it would fall through if it stood on his. the Isaac Newton idea that was never really popularised. Byron had a cat too. And Byron had a menagerie, didn't he? I mean, tell me a little bit about him.
He did have a menagerie. Yes, he did. He did have a menagerie. I don't necessarily know that he was. I think he just loved all animals, and especially exotic animals.
Well, I mean, when he was in Venice, allegedly, in his palazzo, I mean, I just seen there were 10 horses, 8 dogs, 3 monkeys, 5 cats, an eagle, a crow, a falcon, 5 peacocks, 2 guinea hens, and an Egyptian crane. And they could, apart from the horses, they were allowed to roam free through the palazzo.
Indeed. Can you imagine?
And one drank from a skull.
Yes, well, macabre.
Yeah. I mean, let's move on then to the more modern day. Andy Warhol.
Yes,
pop artist, known for his soup cans and Marilyn Monroe, lesser known for his fascination with cats. Tell me a little bit about Warhol.
Indeed. Well, Warhol obviously moved to New York, and his mother moved as well and brought to come and live with him, and brought 2 cats with her. Siamese cats, and they began to breed, and they all looked the same. Obviously, they were Siamese, so he called them all Sam. And then, in order to start sort of marketing his talent, him and his mother, they produced a limited edition book of hand-coloured lithographs called 25 Cats Named Sam and 1 Blue Pussy, which he took around all the marketing companies. He illustrated the book, and his mother did handwritten calligraphy. So that was the start of it, really.
And I mean, there is a sort of link with cats and artists. Be they, I mean, Tracy Emin has got a cat. Yeah. Is a cat fanatic as well.
Yeah. Sadly, her cat called Docket died earlier this year. But she has. She absolutely, doted on him. Basically, in 2002, he went missing, and she. She made posters and put them up on lampposts, and I think the people in her neighbourhood knew her. And basically, people were going around taking the posters down from the lamppost because they thought they would be worth something because they were by Tracy Emin.
But knowing Tracy Emin's art, I mean, and her most famous piece, surely probably Docket was somewhere beneath an unmade bed.
Maybe.
Freddie Mercury.
Indeed.
Freddie Mercury, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Now, tell me about Fred, because Freddie was renowned for his love of cats.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely, absolutely loved them. Well, it started when he lived with Mary Austin, his friend and partner for 7 years. They owned a pair of cats called Tom and Jerry. But when they separated, Mary got the cats. So instead, Freddie got a beautiful long-haired blue point called Tiffany. He adopted cats as well. They were given to him by his friends when he went on tour. He used to ring up to talk to the cats, and he just doted on them, basically. And when he died, sadly, he left most of his fortune to Mary Austin, but she moved into the lodge where he lived to look after the cats. so he carried on. But yeah, he made a solo album called Mr. Bad Guy, and it was dedicated to my cat Jerry, also Tom, Oscar and Tiffany, and all the cat lovers across the universe. And he said something, everybody else. I'm not sure I'm allowed to
Yes,
say
indeed.
That
no, please don't. I mean, we never make us close, but I get it completely. I mean, that's quite outstanding when you dedicate an entire album to the feline population that you know.
Absolutely.
One of the most unlikely cat lovers, I thought, is Burroughs, William Burroughs, of course. The junkie writer, editor of The Naked Lunch, etc. And he had a real
he did towards the end of his life. Yeah, he definitely did. Beat Generation, all of that stuff. I'm just trying to find the quote that he did. Sorry about this.
It's quite all right. It's live radio. It's fine. But I mean, his writing is so sort of out there, and he was so well known this sort of wild man, and he lived in Tangier.
It was from the end of his life, really. In 86, he wrote an autobiographical novella called The Cat Inside, where he wrote about his love of cats, and he had his little Ruski restored. He said, restored his humanity. And when his favourite, Fletch, died, Burroughs died 3 weeks later.
Wow. I mean, there is...
Because he said the only thing that... the quote that I got in my book, he says, the only thing that can resolve conflict is love, like I felt for Fletch and Ruski, Spooner and Calico. Pure love, what I feel for my cats, present and past. Love, what is it? Most natural painkiller, what there is, love.
I mean, there is something about having a purring cat, isn't there? I mean, it does bring the stress of it. And that stroking of the cat is proven by science. You know, the people saying, show me the science.
No, indeed. Yeah, they're just wonderful, wonderful pets. They make wonderful pets. And they, they keep you on your toes, don't they? Do you know what I mean? They're not... always predictable. And
well, I had a situation last night because I live off grid, okay, so I'm powered by a generator at the end of the land, all right, and I just cooked myself this rather tasty, if I say so myself, of soy chicken, and that's not what I am, that was chicken with soy, and the generator went on the blink, so there am I with a dish containing chicken in one hand,
yes,
and thinking, well, I've got to go now got to go now to the. So I just put the dish down on the breakfast bar and sort of went towards the. And as I went past the large bay window, I looked and 50 was making a beeline towards the kitchen. So talk about keeping yourself on your toes. Because I know exactly.
Did you manage to retrieve your dinner?
Salvaged, but there have been times, I can assure you.
Was her nibbles?
Yes, it was her
little nibbles.
Little nibbles. Well, I once famously made the mistake of actually getting up because you had to turn the generator on to put the lights on, and I famously made the mistake of putting the dry cat food next to the breakfast cereal and poured myself a bowl of something one morning. which was I'd found myself on the wardrobe halfway through the day. Yeah, on top of the wardrobe.
Oh,
it was, so. John Lennon, it's 40 years since his passing, and I wasn't aware that John Lennon was a big cat fan. I that one passed me by.
No, yes, he was. It started when he was young, when he was living with his aunt. And I'm just trying to find the section. And George Harrison as well. He was another Beatle that loved cats.
Yeah, but George Harrison was all mystic and interesting and mansion. So you can imagine George sitting there in some sort of interesting yoga position and the cat looking at him or just adopting the same sort of look.
Yeah. So, no, he had... when he was living with his Aunt Mimi and his Uncle George, he had three cats, apparently, and he'd cycle to the fishmongers and buy hake for them. And then when he got married to Cynthia... he insisted that they got a cat, and it was a tabby called Mimi, named after his aunt. And then they had about 10 cats eventually with Cynthia.
Right.
And wherever he lived, he would always have cats. With Yoko, he had cats. They had a pair of black and white cats called Salt and Pepper. So, yeah, I mean, lots of, there are lots of... famous people in the book, a lot of the men, actually, that you wouldn't think would have a love of cats.
Yeah.
So I think in that respect, the book is surprising.
It gives
you a different perspective on them, I think, as people, and it can change your perception of them.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, men are supposed to like dogs and women are supposed to like cats because women.
Yeah, exactly.
And your book shows it doesn't. That's not exactly the case.
No, it absolutely does, yeah. I mean, there are some women in it, obviously, but then, men were more famous than women because they were in the public sphere, and women weren't during the 17th, 18th, 19th century. So it's no surprise. But the surprise is that they had a passion for cats. As you say, people think of they gender these animals, don't they? It's silly, really.
What was your favourite? Who's your favourite story or favourite personality from the book?
From the book. Well, I do have a bit of a sort of. Thomas Hardy was a fantastic novelist.
Yep.
And in the book, there is a fantastic poem, because during his lifetime, he was more known as a poet than an author. And he's got a great poem in there called Last Words to a Dumb Friend, which is a brilliant poem. And he absolutely loved them. And there is a very sad, tragic twist to the story, which I'm not going to reveal.
Thank you.
Because people should buy the book and read what happened.
Absolutely. We'll always leave them with a cliffhanger, that's what I say, Christina.
But it does fit very much with his themes of his books of tragedy and fate and all of those things.
Yes,
so
indeed. So we could
that's
have.
That's all I'll say.
Forget Tessa the D'Urbervilles. It should have been Tiddles of the D'Urbervilles. There we go. That's the one we should have had. What do you hope that people will take from, I'm just thinking of Far From the Mewing, Meowing Crowd now, sorry.
I just hope that people are surprised by it, really, about the stories of these people, because it is the details of people's personal lives that are interesting. Official biographers would probably sort of not include these stories that I have in my book. So it's about their relationship with cats. As I say, I hope they're surprised. I hope they're entertained. I hope they laugh. They might cry. All things, really. And it's the sort of book that you can pick up with you having a cup of coffee and read an entry. It's very sort of, you don't have to sit down in one session and read it all.
And perhaps you could help me with one final question here, Christina.
I can try.
Well, we're here in the festive season. Christmas is almost upon us. And lots of people will have put up their Christmas tree already. What is it with cats and Christmas trees?
I don't know. Strangely enough, a friend of mine has got a kitten called Merlin, and she's been posting photographs of her naked Christmas tree.
Right.
Because she can't put decorations up because Merlin is sleeping in the Christmas tree.
That's all the decoration you would need, surely.
Indeed. So they're going very minimalist with their Christmas tree this year.
Well, I was once almost killed by a Christmas tree because I ended up sleeping on the floor of a friend's house, and Flash, their cat, decided to take a flying leap at aforementioned baubles or Christmas tree at about 3 a.m, and the whole thing came crashing down, missing me by inches.
Oh, dear. Well, yeah, cats and Christmas trees, I agree. They're like sort of catnip, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they're to you it's a Christmas tree, to me it's a Christmas tree, to the cat it's a multi-adventure what's-it-centre, so there you go. This book is called Famous Cat Lovers Through the Centuries. It's by Christina Hamilton. It's out now with Blackbird Books. Christina, if people want to find out more about you or about the book, I know that you do the social media thing. Where can they find you?
Well, the book has got a Facebook page called Famous Cat Lovers Through the Centuries. I'm on Instagram, christina.hamilton.9216. I'm on Twitter, XTC at 2003. Can I just say for your listeners, if they want to buy the book, it's available. Probably the best place for them to buy it is bookdepository.com because it's free delivery worldwide. It's also available as an ebook, and of course you can download it from Amazon.
And also you can download it from the TRE virtual bookstore as well, making it even easier.
Oh, right.
Yes,
fantastic.
Indeed.
There we are then. You can have it straight away because if you order the book, I'm not sure it'll come for Christmas.
Well, okay.
But it's on Waterstones as well. But as I say, bookdepository.com, you can get free delivery worldwide.
And it can also, the other thing I say is, you know, cats sort of carry on, because if you look at the current situation politically, you know, the most popular person in number 10 at the moment is, of course, Larry the Cat.
Yeah.
So there,
yeah.
There you go.
I follow him on Twitter.
So same here, I'm afraid. Yes, we both do. We are both obviously cat people. I've got a sweatshirt that's been donated to me, which is from a listener that says "Best cat that ever." It's been lovely to speak to you, Christina Hamilton. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Just want to say happy, safe Christmas to all your listeners and to yourself, Giles.
Christina Hamilton, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks very much. Bye bye.